Imagine for a second that you just bought a brand new car.
Okay, sounds nice.
Right. It is beautiful, like top of the line. You drive it off the lot and it is absolutely perfect. But, you know, over the next few months, something weird starts happening.
Weird how?
The longer you drive it, the less the car seems to understand how roads actually work.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it starts hesitating at green lights or like forgetting what stop signs mean, maybe even pulling into oncoming traffic.
That is terrifying.
Completely. So you take it to the mechanic and they look under the hood and they tell you, well, your car didn't break. It just drifted.
Yeah, which sounds like a total science fiction nightmare.
Exactly.
But in the world of artificial intelligence, I mean, this is a daily operational reality. Models degrade. We tend to assume an AI model is like a static product.
Right, like you build it and it's done.
Exactly. You train it, you freeze it, you sell it. But in reality, it's a living system interacting with a constantly shifting world.
And that shifting is the problem.
Huge problem. If developers can't accurately and precisely describe how that system is changing after it's deployed, we just can't trust it. And regulators, well, they cannot legally regulate it.
Okay, let's unpack this, because this degradation is the core of a massive high-stakes legal issue that we're getting into today.
It really is.
Today's deep dive is built on a stack of notes and this really groundbreaking paper we have. It's titled A Six-Dimensional Taxonomy of Post-Training Adaptation Techniques with Applications in AI Governance.
It's a mouthful, but it's important.
It is. We are heading straight into the wild west of AI modifications. We're looking at everything that happens after a model is initially trained.
The post-deployment phase.
Right. Like, why does a multi-million-dollar model start forgetting the rules of the road in the first place?
Well, the machine learning community breaks this degradation down into two main culprits. First, you have what's called covariate
Which
shift.
is often called virtual drift, right?
Yeah, exactly. Virtual drift. This happens when the input data changes out in the real world, but the underlying rules haven't.
Give me an example of that.
So think of a medical AI. It's trained on these beautiful, high-resolution hospital X-rays.
Okay.
But then suddenly, out in the field, it starts getting fed blurry images taken from a smartphone.
Oh, I see.
The biology of the disease hasn't changed at all, but the format of the input shifted so drastically that the AI just can't read it anymore.
So the data changed, but the target remains the same.
Exactly. But the more insidious problem is concept drift, or real drift.
Real drift.
Yeah, this is when the actual mathematical mapping between inputs and outputs fundamentally changes, like the rules of the game shift entirely.
How does that happen?
Well, say you trained a financial AI on market behaviors from 2019.
Okay, pre-pandemic.
Right. By 2021, the definition of a safe investment completely inverted. To fix either of these drifts, developers have to open the model back up and modify it post-deployment.
Which brings us to a massive red flag raised in the source material. Terminological ambiguity.
Yes, the vocabulary is a mess.
The tech world is incredibly sloppy with its vocabulary. Developers use a term like fine-tuning to describe wildly different things,
Oh,
right?
absolutely.
Like one team says, oh, we fine-tuned the model. And what they mean is they tweaked a few parameters over their lunch break.
Right, a tiny adjustment.
But then another team says fine-tuning, and they mean they structurally rebuilt the entire brain of a billion-parameter AI using a massive server farm.
And that ambiguity, I mean, it is a regulatory nightmare right now.
Because regulators don't do ambiguity.
Exactly. We are dealing with frameworks like the EU AI Act or the FDA's Predetermined Change Control Plan, the PCCP. These laws demand precision. The EU AI Act specifically looks for, quote, substantial modifications to determine if a high-risk AI system needs to be pulled offline, entirely reclassified, and completely re-audited.
And here's the crazy part. Regulators like the EU are currently judging these modifications by just looking at the raw computing power used.
FLOPs, floating point operations.
Yeah. If a modification consumed one-third or more of the FLOPs used during the original training, the EU just assumes it must be a massive structural change.
Which is a huge assumption.
Wait, I mean, measuring how much a model changed just by looking at the computing power used feels like judging how spicy a dish is by how long it was in the oven.
That is a great analogy.
Doesn't that completely miss the point? I mean, you can throw a habanero into a cold salad and change the whole profile in 2 seconds.
That is the exact flaw the paper highlights. This compute proxy completely fails to capture modern, highly targeted techniques.
Because you don't always need a ton of power to change the model.
Exactly. There are methods like knowledge editing where developers don't retrain the model at all.
What do they do?
They mathematically locate a specific factual association, like say they want to replace the name of the CEO of a company in the model's memory.
Okay.
They just go in and update those specific weights. Or there's activation steering, where they actually intervene during the model's processing to steer its internal logic on the fly.
So they're basically doing brain surgery while the patient is awake.
Pretty much. And these techniques radically alter the AI's behavior, but they consume almost zero compute. So they easily bypass the EU's one-third FLOP's threshold.
Man. So the law is setting up tripwires for a giant construction crane, while developers are quietly sneaking into the basement with a lockpick.
That is exactly what's happening. And this is why the authors argue we can't just list techniques or rely on compute power anymore. We need a multidimensional map.
To plot every single modification.
Yes, a taxonomy that establishes exactly what is physically happening to the AI, why it's happening, and how deep it goes.
Okay, let's build that map. Because to fix a mess this big, you have to establish foundational boundaries first.
Right.
Before you can even talk about what you're doing to an AI, you have to define what kind of AI it is. Because the architecture dictates what's mathematically possible in the first place.
That's dimension six in the paper, the model type.
Yeah, the source material maps this hierarchy out, starting from traditional machine learning up to deep learning, foundation models, and finally large language models, or LLMs.
The model type acts as the ultimate filter. You can't use an LLM technique like prompt engineering on an old school traditional model like a random forest.
It just doesn't make sense.
Right. Once you've filtered for the architecture, you move to the physical mechanism, dimension one. What is literally changing in the software?
Are we doing a parametric update? That is where you go in and change the numerical weights.
The literal mathematical connections of the AI's neural network.
Right. Or are we using an inference time zero footprint mechanism?
And a prime example of a zero footprint mechanism is retrieval augmented generation, or RAG.
We hear about RAG all the time.
It's huge right now. With RAG, you aren't changing the model's internal brain at all. You have a completely frozen model, and you hook it up to a search engine or an external database.
So it's looking things up instead of memorizing them.
Exactly. When a user asks a question, the system retrieves a relevant document, injects it into the prompt, and basically says, "Hey, answer the user's question using only this document."
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the AI's internal weights haven't been structurally rewired, but its output is suddenly vastly more accurate.
Here's where it gets really interesting from a compliance standpoint. Understanding that physical mechanism, knowing if it changed a parametric update versus a zero footprint intervention like a RAG that determines your legal survival.
It absolutely does.
If you update your AI using RAG, you won't trigger the EU AI Act's heavy thresholds for changing the model's weights because you didn't change the weights.
Right.
But you aren't off the hook. Because you hook the AI up to an external database, you still trigger strict transparency obligations regarding what is actually in that database.
Because the mechanism dictates the audit pathway.
Okay.
If you change the mathematical parameters, regulators want to see regression testing. They want proof you didn't break the base model's safety guardrails.
Which is expensive.
Very. But if you use a zero footprint method like RAG, auditors don't care about the frozen model. They want to audit your retrieved database.
What are they looking for?
They're looking for copyright infringement, factual accuracy, bias, stuff like that.
Okay, so we know what is physically changing and which models can handle it, but regulators also care deeply about intent. Why are developers opening the hood and what kind of fuel are they pouring into the engine?
That brings us to dimensions two and three.
Yeah, the taxonomy maps out the practitioner's intent, the goal. Are they just fixing broken models through drift remediation? Or is it capability extension where you teach the AI to process audio instead of just text?
And what's fascinating here is how the law looks at intent. The most heavily scrutinized intent right now is adapting the model for trust.
Trust. So that's alignment, safety, and explainability.
Yes. And explainability is formally recognized in this taxonomy as a standalone adaptation goal, which has massive legal implications.
Well, yeah, everyone wants to know why the black box made the decision it did. But how do you actually adapt an AI for explainability without breaking it?
You use techniques like a linear probe.
What is that?
So instead of rewriting the massive complex neural network, you train a tiny, separate linear classifier, the probe.
Nope.
You attach this probe to one of the hidden layers deep inside the AI. And as the AI processes data, the probe reads the internal mathematical states and translates them into human understandable concepts.
Like it's reading the AI's mind.
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah.
And under the FDA's PCCP, or the EU AI Act's transparency mandates, appending a linear probe for explainability is legally and mechanistically distinct from modifying the model to improve its raw performance.
Oh, so it's treated differently by the law.
Exactly. It is a specific, auditable compliance intervention.
It's all about proving the why. But you can't achieve the why without the what? The AI's data diet. Dimension 3. The taxonomy maps this data requirement from small labeled data sets, which is maybe a few hundred highly curated examples from lab scientists all the way to preference pairs.
Preference pairs are the backbone of how we align modern models today.
Explain how that works.
Well, human annotators are given two different AI-generated answers, and they rank which one is safer or more helpful or less biased.
So they're grading the AI.
Yeah. And this feedback is fed back into the model to mathematically penalize bad behavior and reward good behavior.
Okay. And then the paper draws this very strict operational boundary around something called user interaction data.
This is a huge deal.
Yeah, this isn't curated in a lab. This is the raw, live behavioral exhaust generated by end users during active deployment. Like, if I'm chatting with a customer service AI and it learns from my specific corrections and session logs on the fly, that is user interaction data.
And because that data is tied to a real person, using it to adapt an AI instantly triggers strict GDPR consent rules.
You're suddenly in privacy law territory.
Exactly. Purpose limitations, data minimization duties. The compliance burden just multiplies the second a model learns from live users.
Which naturally raises the stakes for the GDPR, right to erasure. What happens when a user demands their interaction data be removed from the AI's brain?
Oh, it gets messy.
Yeah, the taxonomy says a company has to use a forget set specification to execute machine unlearning.
Right.
The problem is, machine unlearning isn't just hitting a delete button on a hard drive. Reading the mechanics in the source material, current unlearning methods are only approximate.
Because they can't easily just pull the data out.
Right. They don't erase the data. They basically scramble the mathematical pathways leading to that specific memory so the model can't access it.
The knowledge is mathematically suppressed, not destroyed.
And that leads to benign relearning attacks. Since the data is still hiding in the math, a user can unknowingly or maliciously feed the model a few specific, seemingly harmless examples that act like a cryptographic key.
It unlocks it.
Yes. These prompts realign the scrambled pathways, suddenly unlocking the suppressed weights and making the quote-unquote deleted data accessible again.
And if that happens, you are in direct violation of the right to erasure.
Wow.
Yeah, governance frameworks cannot treat remove as a single clean software operation anymore. Auditors have to actually test the model's resilience against those relearning attacks to ensure the data stays suppressed over time.
Okay, so if I'm an auditor, knowing the intent and the data isn't enough. My immediate next questions are, how deep did you dig into the software architecture to make this change? And is this change going to last forever or just for the afternoon?
Which brings us to dimensions 4 and 5, persistence and scope.
Let's do persistence first. How long does it last?
Right. We have to categorize the temporal lifespan of the adaptation. The taxonomy breaks this down into states. So scheduled permanent is a baked-in parameter update meant to last forever.
It's permanent.
Yes. Then version persistent classifies things like external R-gray databases. The model itself doesn't change, but the database it relies on is maintained and version controlled over time.
And then you have session ephemeral, which is just a transient change.
Right.
Like if I tell the AI, respond to all my questions like a pirate, it modifies its behavior for our chat. But the moment I close the window, that adaptation vanishes.
Exactly. And knowing this persistent state is a primary input for version control.
How so?
Well, if a change is scheduled permanent, an auditor requires validation against long-term behavioral drift. But if it's session ephemeral, they need software validation, proving the model actually flushes its context window properly.
Oh, to make sure it clears out.
Yes, guaranteeing no piratical state bleeds over to the next user session.
That makes total sense.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings us to the structural scope. How much of the model is actually being modified?
Dimension 5.
Think of scope like renovating a house. Are we doing a whole model update that is like tearing the house down to the studs, rewriting the core architecture so the new math is inextricably mixed with the old math?
Massive overhaul.
Right. Or are we doing a modular update? That's like building a new sunroom. It's bolted onto the side of the house, and if the roof leaks, we could just unbolt it and throw it away without destroying the main structure.
I like that.
And finally, you have input-output space, which is really just rearranging the furniture without touching the walls at all.
That analogy perfectly illustrates the stakes under the EU Medical Device Regulations, or MDR.
Really? How does MDR look at it?
Well, if a developer executes a whole model update, the change is lineage opaque. You cannot disentangle the new parameters from the old.
The house is fully rebuilt.
Yes. So under the MDR, you are forced to conduct full system regression testing to prove the entire foundation is still safe.
That sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah.
But what if you just bolt on the modular sunroom?
If you declare the scope as modular, using an isolated mathematical adapter, the regulatory burden just plummets.
Because it's isolated.
Exactly. You might only need to test that specific decoupled module. Your change control documentation proves that if the module hallucinates, you can just sever it, leaving the validated base architecture completely untouched.
Wow, that is a massive difference in time, money, and legal exposure for a developer.
Huge.
Okay, let's see. This entire six-dimensional taxonomy operate as a superpower in a real-world, high-stakes scenario.
Let's do it.
This is straight from the paper. Imagine a hospital deploying an AI foundation model to generate radiology reports. Over a few months, the engineering team makes three distinct updates to the AI. Under the old Wild West rules, a developer just writes a single line in the changelog. Update V2.1. The model was fine-tuned on recent hospital data.
Which, to an auditor, that log entry is a total disaster.
Right, it says nothing.
It is dangerously ambiguous, but using the taxonomy, we dissect the actual three layers of changes they made.
Okay, what was layer one?
Layer one was domain-specific, PEF'd. Parameter-efficient fine-tuning. Specifically, they used a technique called low-rank adaptation, or LORAI.
What does that actually mean mechanically?
Mechanically, it means they froze the massive, multi-billion parameter-based model and just trained a tiny pair of matrices, a sidecar, on 5,000 internal hospital reports.
Okay, so mapping that on our taxonomy. The mechanism is a parametric update. The scope is modular because of that sidecar. And the persistence is scheduled permanent.
Spot on.
And because it permanently changes parameters, this specific layer triggers the EU AI Act's substantial modification analysis.
Exactly. Now moving to layer two, the developers wanted the AI to follow the latest clinical guidelines, so they added our AG pipeline.
So they hooked it up to an external database.
Yes. The mechanism is context injection. The data relies on an external corpus. Its scope is input-output space, and its persistence is version persistent.
Okay, so they didn't touch the internal brain weights here.
Right, they didn't. But because those external clinical guidelines are shaping medical decisions, this layer must pass clinical transparency and copyright audits.
Okay. And finally, layer three. The doctors were annoyed by how the reports were formatted, so the developers used prompt engineering to force a specific layout.
Right. So the mechanism is, again, context injection, but the data is zero shot.
Just natural language instructions.
Exactly. And crucially, the persistence is session ephemeral. It clears out after every single report is generated.
So why does breaking a vague fine-tuning log into these three distinct profiles actually matter? Let's say the AI suddenly starts hallucinating tumors that aren't there.
That's the nightmare scenario.
Under the old system, the hospital might have to pull the entire multi-million dollar model offline because they don't know what broke.
Right, they'd be flying blind.
But using this map, the FDA, relying on their PCCP framework, can instantly diagnose the system. They look at the profiles and say, well, the base model is frozen. The hallucination must be in the layer one modular adapter or maybe corrupted data in the layer two array database.
Yes. And they can simply unbolt that specific modular adapter or correct the external database. They don't have to throw the whole model away.
This taxonomy is not just academic pedantry. It is the literal difference between a safe, auditable medical device and an unpredictable black box.
It really enables targeted review, rollback planning, and component level testing.
It changes everything about how we govern these systems.
Yeah.
So, you know, the next time you read an article about a tech CEO casually stating their new AI was fine-tuned, you now have the tools to ask the hard questions.
You can ask what the physical mechanism is.
What is the structural scope? Are they renovating the whole house or just moving the furniture?
And standardizing this vocabulary today is incredibly vital because the source text points toward a future direction that complicates this exponentially.
Which is what?
Agentic AI.
Oh, man. This is where things get truly wild.
Yeah, currently we rely on human developers to adapt AI. We are the ones making the changes. But we are rapidly entering an era where AI agents orchestrate their own adaptation.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Imagine an AI agent deployed to manage a company's logistics. It notices it is consistently failing to predict shipping delays in a specific region.
Okay.
Instead of waiting for a human to patch it, the agent queries an external API, retrieves new port data, and autonomously updates its own context window.
So it builds its own RAG pipeline on the fly.
Exactly. And it might not stop there. If it realizes the internal logic is flawed, an advanced agent could theoretically spin up its own preference pairs, fine-tune a modular submodel, and bolt it onto its own architecture to fix the deficiency.
Without any human involvement?
None.
Right.
So if an AI is autonomously adapting itself in real time, altering its scope, mechanism, and persistence without human intervention, applying this governance map won't just be an exercise for human regulators anymore.
We will have to explicitly teach the AI to apply this taxonomy to itself.
Yes, forcing it to legally log and justify its own evolution.
Teaching an AI to regulate its own evolution. Wow. Just something to chew on the next time you're casually chatting with an AI assistant. I mean, it might be quietly rebuilding its own mathematical architecture while you talk.
It very well might be.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the source material. We really hope this gave you a powerful new lens to view the tech industry and the AI models integrating into our lives.
Absolutely.
Keep questioning the information around you. And remember, just because the car is driving smoothly today doesn't mean it isn't drifting. We'll catch you on the next one.